Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And I'm very excited this afternoon to bring to you an exciting show. Today we're going to talk about synchronicities and how one moment in time can change a life forever. Mary Ellen Angel Scribe and I met Betty Tisdale about 10 years ago. And believe me, she's a living saint. She is the kind of woman who in that one moment when God called, she said yes. She didn't hesitate or think this was someone else's mission. She just rolled up her sleeves and pushed her mind into getting help and to get a way to answer the problem. This led her to a Cinco Destiny life, a life-changing event. Spirit is so amazing. In fact, today's show is so exciting to me because it's another example how much spirit and Cinco Destiny happens in our lives. This is, in fact, the 31st anniversary of Operation Baby Lift. Betty, 31 years ago today, actually rescued 219 children from Vietnam. Betty, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That was a wonderful introduction.
Well, you're an amazing woman. I want you to tell me, how did you get involved with this in the first place?
Well, you know, there are so many amazing, wonderful people in the world, and the one person that I looked up to after I read his book called Deliver Us from Evil was Dr. Tom Dooley. And I read the book, and I was so taken by what he had done over in Asia that I sent my $5 in, as most people do, and thought, I'm helping all those people.
Where were you living at the time?
I was living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after that, I was transferred by United States Steel to New York City. And there I lived in the Salvation Army residence for a while because I didn't know anyone there. And I noticed in the paper that Tom Dooley was coming to New York for his first operation for cancer. I had no idea that he had cancer. He was just a young man, very young man. And so I called the hospital and I said, you know, I can type. Would you please tell Dr. Dooley that I'd be happy to help him with his correspondence?
And you had never met him before?
Never met him at all. And she switched me right to his room and he answered the phone and all I could think of was his picture, which was on the back of the book. And he was such a handsome young doctor. He had gone to Notre Dame. He was a very spiritual person. And I thought, you know, this can't be happening to me. So I did talk to him, and he said, I said I could type. And he said, fine. He said, give me your phone number, and I'll call you back. Well, that was the beginning of my way of doing things. I never wait for people to call me back. I just decided that I would go up to the hospital and pick up the mail and sort it and have it ready for him.
The first book you read, what was it really about? Was it about his mission?
Dr. Dooley was, at that time, when he wrote, right after he wrote the book, but before that, he was in the Navy. He was a Lieutenant JG. And since he could speak French and he was a doctor, the Navy sent him over to Haiphong in North Vietnam when the French had lost the war. And all of the North Vietnamese who did not want to live under communism decided that they were going to flee to the South. And so we, as Americans, wanted to help them and sent a ship over to Haiphong Harbor to help these poor, wretched people, as Tom Dooley used to say, flee to the South with nothing but the clothes on their backs. And that's what started the whole thing. When he saw the thousands and thousands of refugees, and among them was a woman named Vu Thi Nhai, Madame Vu Thi Nhai, was a beautiful woman who was escaping with a lot of children that she had picked up along the way.
Some of them had been abandoned. Kind of got lost along the way.
That's right. Some had been abandoned. Some had been found lying next to their parents who had died. She just couldn't let them stay there, and she got to Haiphong. Tom Dooley, and of course all our Navy men fell in love with all the little children, and they just decided that they were going to find a place for her in Saigon, and they did. Tom Dooley sent a couple of his Navy corpsmen down to find a place for the orphanage And he did, and that was the beginning of Unlock Orphanage in Saigon.
So he helped begin this orphanage.
He did. And then when he got back, he wrote this book. He raised a lot of money. People were clamoring for him to come and speak. And he was sending money to Madame Nye to help the children.
To keep the orphanage running.
Exactly.
So you just took it. You had read this in the paper. And synchronicity had it that you called there, and they actually just connected you to his room. And you were off and running with this.
I was. It was wonderful, really. And, of course, he after he went on his tour to raise money, and apparently he had his operation, and it was filmed on CBS, I think, because he wanted people not to be afraid of cancer. And he thought it was all gone. He had malignant melanoma. And, of course, he died one day after his 34th birthday in 1961.
Yeah.
And he was a very young man. He was a living saint and had changed so many lives, including mine.
So you didn't take no for an answer, and you what, wound up in the hospital checking on him?
That's right. I went up there, and I picked up all his mail, and I started sorting it. And then what he did was he decided that he was going to dictate on, at that time it was a little machine called a soundscriber, and I, a couple of other girls and I got together, and he would take all his letters. We would send them over to Laos, and then he would dictate answers and send the bundles back.
So you became his Girl Friday.
Green discs.
You became his Girl Friday. How exciting.
It was exciting. And, you know, I would type till 2 o'clock in the morning because it was just like talking to him. You could hear the kerosene lamp sputtering in the background, and sometimes during the day you could hear the kids, you know, laughing or running around. And he was in the jungles. He was
so
in the jungles.
So how long did you know him before you took action and actually went over there?
Actually, I knew him about a year and a half, 1, about almost 2 years.
Had you ever been out of the United States before?
Yes, I had. I had gone to Europe and so on. I used to go on vacations. Actually, I used to go on vacations to places where most young girls go, you know, you lie on the beach and then you come back in, put your little black dress on and pearls and see what you can do.
For
fun.
So you took this as your almost personal passion once you met this
man. It changed my life. I could no longer lie on the beaches of Bermuda or wherever and do nothing.
So you continue to do your day job
uh-huh.
and your Girl Friday job, and then you tell me about your first trip.
My first trip, I flew over to Vietnam, and I went on Pan Am, and I got, you know, naturally I took a lot of stuff with me, and I knew one of the vice presidents of Pan Am through Tom Dooley, because his name was John Casey, and he and his sister were good friends of Tom Dooley, so whenever I said I had to go, I got special treatment on the plane and so on. And I continued that until one year I couldn't afford to fly over. And I just couldn't afford it, even though I would.
Now, did you have any special skills? You don't have any nurses training. You didn't have anything, right?
No.
I'll tell you, though, I had absolute love for everybody.
I had been what they called a gray lady with the Red Cross. And
so
I worked in veterans' hospitals, but writing letters and things like that.
More clerical.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you got to the orphanage the first time, were you really shocked?
Oh, you have no idea. I had no idea that babies would be lying in rusty cribs with no mattresses, no anything. With, you know, the cribs, you know, they were wet and it would drip down onto the floor. And then they had so many babies that they used rags, and they use like the rice sacks to tie and make hammocks between the cribs so that they could put more babies in them. And of course,
how many babies
can't
do you think were there the first time you went?
Mm-hmm?
How many babies do you think were there the first time you went?
Oh, I don't know. I would imagine there would be over 100 at least.
Oh.
And they really didn't have much of anything at all. And the older children that they had, some of them had been left over from the French occupation as far as some of them were mixed race and so on, from the Senegalese. people or soldiers that the French brought in. So it was really, and Madame Nye, of course, she was the epitome of an aristocrat. She was a top tennis player in North Vietnam. She was, she had an education, just a wonderful woman, and gave all of that up to care of children.
Children who were not her own.
Exactly. From 1964.
Because we're on the radio and we only have so much time, I want to get the whole story in. Now, when you actually had to rescue these children, these 219, was Dr. Dooley already passed?
Oh, yes.
He had already
died in 1961, and this was 1975. When
so you had kept going over there during the war or not war?
Oh, yes. Every year I was over there for at least 2 months.
And now, did you work with just that orphanage or did more orphanages?
No, it was just Onlock Orphanage.
Okay, Onlock Orphanage.
In fact, I hitched rides on airplanes.
So what happened all of a sudden?
Well, when I heard, I always kept up with the news that the North Vietnamese were coming closer and closer to Saigon. I knew that I had to get over there and get the children out. I've been going back to Vietnam since then, of course, under the communists, and it's what we thought was going to happen did not happen, although they did put a lot of people in re-education camps and so on. But it wasn't the wholesale killing that we thought was going to happen. So I wasn't going to let that happen to my babies. So I was going to bring all 400. We had over 400 at the orphanage. But then the Vietnamese government said I couldn't take out any child over 10. And I had to have birth certificates for all of them.
Impossible. These are kids left by the road.
Exactly. So I got some blank birth certificates, and we filled them all in. And so I brought a lot of kids out. There were
But how older. How did the actual rescue happen, right? Because I think that's an amazing synchronicity story. Because really, you know, you didn't have an army of funds at your access. You didn't have, a whole campaign of fundraising going on here in the United States to help you. This was kind of a one-woman show to begin with.
Well, it was. Some of the other, I'll tell you, the Vietnamese or the government, our government, allowed only the adoption agencies. There were 7 registered adoption agencies. I was not one because I wasn't into adoptions. Dr. Dooley believed in giving them a healthy body and an education to be the future citizens of their country. So that's what I was doing. So since I wasn't a registered adoption agency, I had to find other ways to get out. And I had to find a way to fly them out, a place to put them, and how to get them adopted.
So how much time did you have?
Just about a week. So in order to do that, I called the Trezor Lutheran Adoption Agency in Pennsylvania, who had done some adoptions, asked them if they would handle them. They said yes. I called the general at Fort Benning, Georgia. We were living in Georgia, to see if I could get some Army barracks. And when he didn't return my call, I called the Secretary of the Army. He didn't return my call, and this was like the day before I was to leave, so I called his mother.
Oh, boy, that's
and
the I'll way to everybody's heart, through their mom.
Go to the top. And, and
the
then
mom
I left.
Will really understand your mission, too.
Yes, and I left. And I left and without an idea of where I was going to put them, where they were going to end up, or how I was going to get them back.
How did you even get them here? Did you have the flight arrangements arranged?
No. I didn't have a. I called Pan Am and asked them, and they said, "Oh yeah, they could give me a plane. It would be like $125,000." I said, "No problem. I've been on the radio, and money was coming in." Then they called back and said it would be another $350,000, and I said, I can't do that. So I left without a plane reservations or anything. So when I got there, I got there on a Tuesday night. Wednesday, I went to see the ambassador, Ambassador Martin, and I told him what I was trying to do. He said, "Betty, if you can get the Minister of Social Welfare to okay all the children you're taking out, I'll see that you get planes."
Wow,
so
that's
that was
incredible
when
synchronicity
it came up that I couldn't
in 5
take
days.
A child over 10 and all that stuff. Mm. But I was able to get, you know, the birth certificates, which I filled out myself, and took that to them. They okayed it, and I took that over to the embassy, and that was on Thursday. He said, can you be ready to leave at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning? And I said, yes.
That's a feat in itself to get 219 kids.
You bet. It
in
was,
some
it
kind
really
of
was
order to go. And a lot of these were babies, so who was carrying them?
Well, the point, some of the older children would carry them. I asked for escorts, and I got one Australian who said that he would go to the Philippines. So the helpers on the plane helped. So we were able to do it. And then when we changed to World Airways in the Philippines, they had some stewardesses that helped. So
wonderful.
That's how we got them out.
So you fly them out to where?
We flew from Saigon to the Philippines. The Philippines to Los Angeles, and that's where the U.S. government said, well, that's
whoops,
the end
of arrived.
What we're doing. So I had to get, so my husband in Georgia, I called him and I said, what am I going to do? And he said, I've already chartered a United Airlines plane to take you from Los Angeles to Columbus, Georgia.
So he was behind you? Your husband
oh,
was
yes,
behind you?
Oh, yes, yes.
Kind of didn't know what you're doing, but he was going to be there for you.
Oh, yes. I mean, he loved
wonderful.
The children. And it actually, when he was in, I met him, he was in the Army there. He was a colonel. He was the chief of the medical battalion and a pediatrician. And he used to come to the orphanage
as
often as he could, bringing his corpsman over to help.
Wonderful. So you flew all these kids to Georgia.
Yep.
And
then within 30 days, they were all adopted.
That is an amazing story, an amazing feat.
It really is. It really is when I think of it, you know, and you just don't think of what am I going to do.
You're too busy doing it.
That's right. But I'll tell you one thing, Atira, and I know who you are. I know Mary Ellen quite well. I do believe that I am guided. I believe my guardian angels are watching over me even to this day. And there is nothing that I can't do. I hate to say that, but if you make up your mind to do something, it happens. It has happened to me so many times when I don't know how I'm going to do something.
I think you are a fearless woman. I think that's one thing that helps you, Betty, is I think that one thing we have to do is cast off our fears, our personal fears, and trust that God, that's something bigger than us, that will, you know, step in. We go to so many steps. Because truly, before I met you, and one reason I love your whole story so much is I saw a special on TV about Sister Emmanuel in Egypt helping with the city of garbage. And Saad knew I was going to Egypt, took stuff, and got there and thought, you know, I have no idea how to get a hold of her in a city of millions of people. Because I didn't think that far like you. I got so far but didn't think the rest. But by that afternoon, someone had found her, and we were able to give her all the stuff for her children there.
Isn't that wonderful?
So I love this, you know, trusting spirit, following synchronicities. It's just amazing. Now, you're still involved in this. How many years later?
I came back from my 26th trip to Vietnam, and I started an organization called HALO, Helping and Loving Orphans.
I love that, HALO.
Isn't that beautiful?
I love that. That's my favorite
actually,
word,
wasn't
HALO.
My idea. It was another friend of mine's idea, but I thought it was so wonderful.
Perfect.
And
so you just came back, didn't you not?
I just came back, yes.
But you help orphans all over the world, not just in Vietnam.
Well, actually, there's an orphanage down in Bogota, Colombia, called Luzi Vida, Light and Life, and they're all handicapped children. There are two little girls there who have a disease that is fatal. And their little arms and legs are like sticks, and they're all wrapped in saran wrap because their sores are so open. And I cry when I see them, and I took two little new dresses to them, smock dresses that were made in Vietnam. And, you know, I cried when I saw them. They're so sweet. And then there's another little girl called Laura who looks like she's 6 months old, and she's now 6 years old. Just not growing.
So tell me, how do you do your fundraising? How do you do that? Do you do talks? Do you do...
Well, at Christmas time, I send out my Christmas letter, and some of the money comes in then. I don't spend any money on expenses. I work out of my home, and I'm the only one, and I pay for my own airfare and all that stuff. I try to use miles if I'm traveling.
So people could donate miles to you to help
this
project.
But apparently the airlines are funny. you have to donate the exact number of miles that you're going to be giving. You can't donate 15,000 miles. You have to donate 150,000, whatever it takes. That's the airline.
I want to make sure you do have a website.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I'm expecting someone tonight to maybe bring it up to date.
Okay.
Because I'm not that good at it.
Tell me the website so everyone can hear.
www.bettytisdale.com.
Yeah, that's one thing I love about your work, Betty, is that every dime, I mean, I have known you to sleep on a floor, on a mattress, on a floor, to save the money because that would be milk money for the children.
Exactly.
I know what you mean. It's like every dime counts, and when you have seen this firsthand, this kind of poverty and this kind of neglect with children, it really does hurt your heart, and you come home and you really feel, I felt guilty for having a refrigerator that worked and dishwasher. You know, I just thought, oh my God, that's X amount of food for these children.
In Vietnam, I'm now helping a village of lepers, and it's the first time I'd ever seen leprosy in my life. It was in a distant world.
Well, apparently. Somehow in our minds, I was, in America they say it's eradicated, but there is a leper colony in America.
Oh, there is, there too.
And so I was in Morocco the first time I ever saw somebody with leprosy, and I was absolutely stunned. I, like you, thought it was eradicated, but it is not.
But, you know, you can help it with the right medication.
Absolutely.
But they have, in this village, they have their children living there, and it's the children I want to help. I'm trying to now put some sort of a kitchen in a set of four living rooms so the four families can live with one communal kitchen, and that costs $900.
That seems like a little amount for so much.
And then wells. They need wells. They don't have running water.
That's the one thing I found in Egypt, too, is the necessity for clean water, running clean water was absolutely paramount in the village that I work with in Egypt. And I'm so glad to say they finally got their well, and they actually got a small clinic that helps them now.
Right.
So I'm very thrilled about that work.
Well, there's another orphanage in Mexico. That's another one of all little girls in Uruapan, Mexico, that we're helping. And then I have a physical therapy clinic in Afghanistan. You know, there was just something in the paper today showing two little boys, both of them with stumps for their one leg, because there are more mines in Afghanistan than any other country, they say.
Yeah,
so the
Princess
physical
Diane
therapy,
talked a lot about that.
Yeah, it's just a shame.
Well, it's amazing. It sounds like to me that you have so affected so many countries and so many children. You know, have you ever wanted to rescue them all and make them, you know, your personal mission?
I want to help all of them. It's not necessary for me to bring them here in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be happy in their own countries.
But you did adopt them, didn't you?
But I want them to have a healthy body. Someone like Bill Gates is really helping tremendously in Africa. He's got loads and loads and loads of money, and he can eradicate disease.
He really
but
has
helped.
I can
do it little by little, you know.
He did an amazing thing. He gave a lot of money for them to have basic inoculations in Africa. And he just actually did another big donation, and I unfortunately at this moment cannot think of what it was about. But
I think it was about pneumonia.
Yeah, pneumonia, that's right.
Exactly.
It was about pneumonia.
So
and that, amazingly enough, kills a lot, especially children and older people.
Oh, sure, they have no way. My own father died of pneumonia before penicillin came through or whatever it was.
And for our listeners, I think it's very important to state, you know, when we're talking about these countries and these places, if you've never traveled out of the United States, you really do not have an idea of what poverty really is. I mean, I think really this hurricane thing that happened down south awakened our eyes to poverty in the United States.
Exactly.
But even in the United States, there are services, there are churches that help. Oprah is very busy helping.
And all of that, yeah.
But in foreign countries, lots of times, there's just nothing. There are no places to go to get help. Everyone has to survive on their own, and that's one thing I found in Egypt, where the people were absolutely living off the garbage.
Exactly.
That was their way of life, a constant recycling and trying to survive.
Well, my next trip is going to be to Nairobi. I met some wonderful people that are going over there. It was too close to my Vietnam trip. But they want to establish small homes of no more than 15 children at a time so that they can get a little bit more care than in the huge orphanages where there are hundreds of children.
Now,
so,
when you go over, Betty, do you take things? Do you take actual clothing and things? For
I do, but, you know, the airlines are getting a little fussy. And this time what I took, you know, you'd be surprised. Not only did I take clothes that were donated, but I took harmonicas and bubbles. The kids love the bubbles.
I know.
And I had a teenager up on Whidbey Island here who collected bubbles, and I took all of those over, and it was just wonderful to at least give them a little bit of something like that.
Yeah, because these kids really, most of the kids that I've seen in the orphanages, it's not about toys.
No.
It's really about mundane things that we totally take for granted.
That's right.
Diapers and clothing and
milk.
Things to keep
milk.
Warm.
Milk. I give them
enough
money for milk at this House of Love. And the nun that runs it said, I hate to say this, but I've got a few more children, and instead of 1,500, could you give me 1,800 a year for the milk?
So how do you get the money to the countries? If you're not traveling, how do you...
Well, this trip I took money over and handed it in, but most of the time I can wire the money to them. That's the safest way.
And these are all orphanages that you have worked with, and you're absolutely sure the money goes
exactly,
right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And I get a receipt, and when I go over, I see the one little village. They built a beautiful vocational school that I gave them the money for, and I think it was something like $12,000, and two stories. And then when I went over, I got donations and bought 6 sewing machines. And $1,500 worth of fabric.
So the real goal here, really, for you is to help them help themselves.
Exactly.
And stay within their own cultures. You're not trying to move them all into this country.
No, I'm not, even though I love my 5 little girls, who are now the youngest is 32, 33.
So you actually personally adopted
5.
5.
Yes, she weighed less than 5 pounds at 3 months old.
Oh, my goodness.
And now you should see her now.
You were actually the mother of 10 kids, were you not?
Yeah. Yes. And
that's
as
amazing.
I say, you know, what they said in Gone with the Wind, Miss Garland, I ain't never birthed anybody.
10 kids, that's
and
a lot.
And 11 grandchildren now.
Wow, congratulations. Betty, how many years now have you been doing this?
Well, since 1961. And in between, when I was raising my kids and came up here to Seattle. I slowed down, but did, you know, work afterwards, you know, in schools and things. But I stayed away from Vietnam for the simple reason that at one time I was called a baby stealer, and I was a little afraid to go back while my children were quite young. Now I've taken at least 2 of them back to see.
Well, I think there is times that things go on, too, in countries, you know, even in Egypt where I've gone to for over 20 years now. And there are times when it's just not safe, you know, to go there, and we have to honor that. But it doesn't mean we leave those children behind. I know there are ways to wire money. There are ways to keep affecting it. And I have to say the people who are running it day to day, you know, are the unsung heroes. We may facilitate helping things move forward, but there are people there every single day changing those babies' diapers and holding those babies and crying when they lose them. And so, in a way, even though it sounds like our job's tough, you know, I think they have a much tougher job because they're in it day after day after day.
I know. Saving
the world.
I know. I don't know whether I sent you the pictures I sent to... Mary Ellen, and pictures of the 2 babies that I took to the doctors. These doctors that go over there and give their time and equipment and efforts to change a child's life. That's what they're doing.
I know. It's wonderful.
You know.
And we're lucky here in Washington. We actually have a lot of doctors that belong to different programs where they go to other countries and help with cleft palates and they help with the hearing and the eyes.
Exactly.
In these third and fourth world countries, they have a lot of eye problems because people don't shoo flies away like we do here. You know, we don't have the clean environment we have here. And so there's a lot of diseases that are alive and well that are eradicated in the United States.
Exactly. I know.
So it's amazing. Betty, I really have to say, I think this is an amazing story because I do think that there are opportunities in our lives that happen where simply by reading, the power of reading a book, one book, changed your life forever.
Exactly. Right. It certainly did me, anyhow. And, you know, they say that there's a priest who is, through the years, have been trying to petition that Dr. Dooley become a saint. And even though everyone believes that to be a saint you have to have miraculous cures and so on, to me, it's not always a cure, a medical cure. To me, my life was changed completely, and that was a miracle. And so many people, women became nurses, doctors, men became doctors because Dr. Dooley touched their lives. And to me, these are the miracles of
life.
Well,
I think it's the same thing with Mother Teresa.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
She may have had some miraculous healings, but really it was that she took her mission and really made it a life mission and included everybody she could. I mean, she walked the talk just like you do. I mean, I find it so amazing to have the courage to pick up the phone and call him. And, you know, not even, you're like me. I mean, I don't think things are impossible. I just don't
exactly.
think about it. I just do it.
Exactly.
And it's a powerful thing for that to happen. So where did you just come back from?
I just came back from Vietnam.
So is this the same orphanage now that you...
Well, no, these are all... No, Unlock Orphanage is no more.
Okay.
When I brought the children out, the gates were closed. And now that's a low-income housing place of some sort. So what I do is primarily I try to help the mountain people, the people that had helped our soldiers, and... they were called the Montagnards. Now they're all called ethnic minority. And the ethnic minority are the mountain people, villages that work in the tea and the coffee plantations. And they really don't have anything because they're all lumped together, one tribe and another tribe, you know, different tribes.
And so now you're helping villages as well as the orphanages, correct?
Exactly. Because in the villages are the children. And if we don't help those children, then... the whole village will just slip away. So it's not only that, but then the children at the leper colony, actually I'm trying to build vocational schools too for these villages, and it's
because the way out is education, Betty.
Exactly,
the education, way out is education
and a healthy body, you know.
And
so that's how Tom Dooley started.
That's an amazing. Do you remember the name of the book, Tom Dooley's book?
Oh yeah, it's called Deliver Us from Evil. I have it right in front of me. And
is it still in print?
I don't know, but I think you could probably get it either through Amazon or.
That's amazing. Now a film was made. Was it not of this rescue you did?
Yes. It was called The Children of Unlock, and. Ina Bellin, who had been over there and adopted two children, was a movie star. And so she helped write it, and Shirley Jones played me. And, of course, I then became blonde.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
And then I've been on Dateline. And, in fact, Tom Brokaw is coming to Seattle next week. He introduced me on Dateline. And... that's my claim to fame. I've been in Life magazine, Time magazine, a lot of magazines and so on.
Now, you're still a one-woman show, though. Is that not true?
Yes, I am, because I have a certain way of doing things, and I keep my own books, although I do have a treasurer, a wonderful man who was an accountant in his lifetime, and now he's retired. Has had three different types of cancer, but he does all my books for me.
Wonderful.
But I just
But you don't really have a staff.
No, no.
You need a Girl Friday yourself to show up.
Well, I need someone that maybe to keep up my mailing list.
Mm-hmm. And to
things
do a little
like
bit
that,
of typing,
you know,
for you?
Yeah, they could type up things for me.
That's good, yeah.
And that's the drudge work. And I like speaking engagements. Yesterday I went to
speaking engagements are really how you raise a lot of your funding.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, Rotaries, I can go to any Rotary. They need a speaker every week, but they don't really come through with a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But
because
church
Rotaries
groups are really good.
Tend to do local.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll fly anywhere. You pay my airfare, and I'll fly anywhere.
Well, mention your website again. I think it's so important for people to hear about this.
Okay, it's www.bettytisdale.com.
And again, we're really talking about how synchronicities, how it changes our life, and how we can make a conscious choice in one moment. You know, Danny and Brinkley always says, if God couldn't come today and he asked you, would you make the difference? And Betty, you have literally made the difference for thousands and thousands of children and people. I think even, you know, the adults you touch are changed, because I know that when I was graciously asked to your house and I saw your album, it really profoundly changed me, because, you know, in my mind, what I did in Egypt, you know, people, when Mary Ellen wrote it into a story, people would say, oh my God, that's so amazing. But I didn't think of it as amazing.
No.
I just thought of it, well, that was the need, and I did what was needed, and it worked out. You know, I think you're the same way. I don't think you thought you were going to have this mission. I think, you know, the mission sought you.
Well, it's just something that is in my heart. And I think that if you could handle Egypt and I can handle a couple other countries, we're just one person doing something that makes a big difference.
But I think that's the important thing to state is, you know, really, truly, one person is the difference. One person is the world to one person. You know, there's a statement where might not be the world, you know, one person in the world, but you are the world to one person. And each person we touch, we really change their lives. In just that chance meeting, you know, at Christmas time, I always love watching It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
Because it shows you how many lives you touch that you don't even think about. You know, we don't spend time hanging out with, okay, now somebody in Vietnam has a master's degree or is a doctor or nurse because you made sure they didn't die of starvation.
That's true.
Do you ever hear about the stories about the kids, some of the kids?
Oh, yes. When I go back, it's surprising. I do get together with some of them. In fact, the village of Phuc Long, the nurse that comes once a week on her motorbike, and it's over 3 hours on the motorbike, is the only nurse that this whole village has, and I've been able to supply them with all the medicines and things that they need. But she was one of Onlock's children, one that I had to leave behind because she was older, and she went to a re-education camp, and luckily they sent her to a hospital to do menial work, and she just learned while she was there, and now helps these people up in the villages.
Amazing survival story.
And I've seen so many of the older ones had hard lives. She did, and the others, because they had no names, no identification,
so they're
and
invisible.
No education.
They're invisible in their own country.
Yes.
And I would think it would even have been harder for those that were actually mixed races, whether they were French and Vietnam or American in Vietnam. You know, I would think they probably were treated, unfortunately, low.
Well, I do want to make one thing clear, though. I helped a young girl do a paper and a presentation about Vietnam, and one of the things that she had said was, why didn't the U.S. government hand out condoms to all of these soldiers? And I had to put her straight and say, look, the soldiers came to Onlock Orphanage, and they administered, they gave love, they gave toys, they gave clothes, and they helped them because they were the medics. At 4 o'clock, they were gone because they had to do the fighting. But we had all our embassies there, not only ours but other countries, with staffs in villas the construction companies that were building airfields and bridges and so on had thousands of men there supplying them with villas and servants and so on. So don't blame...
Don't point at the American soldiers.
Don't blame the American soldiers. They are the best in the world. They are. And I stand up and I fight for them every day when people try to say, oh, well, those children wouldn't be there if it weren't for the American soldiers.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, Betty, because I have to tell you, the Corps of Engineers was working near my village for Americans. I mean, you know, it was American Corps of Engineers. And when they found out what I was trying to do, I was trying to put a well in, you know, they really came to my rescue. So
I totally know that
they, you know, if you ask and they know about it, these guys have big hearts. You know, they really try and show up 101%.
Yes.
So, Betty, are any of your children carrying on this legacy?
Well, they help me. Like Kim Lon helps me a great deal with office supplies and things like that and things. But they're still young, and they're still making ways for themselves. I have a feeling, this is my own feeling, is that their children are going to keep this up.
And I think, you know, too, I think it's important to say, you know, this was certainly a synchro destiny for you. It really was a passion that became your life passion. And so, you know, everybody's life passion is different. So it's really, if your children don't carry it on, it's not anything to look down on
Well, my daughter,
because
Kim
Lon, everybody's passion is different.
Yeah, lives in Jacksonville, Florida. She's a fifth grade teacher. I'm flying out there at the end of the month. I'm still looking for Miles. But I'm going to be speaking to her fifth grade class and all the other classes in the school she teaches. So these are the ways that I do, you know, I wear a Vietnamese dress, I take a burqa from Afghanistan, kids learn about it, and then they go out and have a car wash or something like that to raise money.
I think it's really wonderful that you do that, because I do think educating our kids, I really think American kids, because they get, you know, $100 tennis shoes and, you know, $100 jackets sometimes,
yeah.
I think that they really don't understand other cultures. That's one reason I think the Peace Corps is so important, because when you go to a third or fourth world country and you really see what they survive on, you know, kids here are griping because they're getting minimum wage. And in the, you go to a fourth world country, and one time I was going to a village early in the morning and I came up on this line of about 300 people standing in line. And I went down the line, at the Kellum English, do you speak English, trying to find out what it was. I didn't know if I should be afraid or, you know,
yeah.
Something had gone wrong in those countries overnight. You could have to flee, and you know that one for well. And it was, know that there were two jobs at a fast food restaurant that would provide their uniforms, and they would work 6 days a week. They would get $35 a month, and they'd get one meal a day.
Oh.
And there was 300 people standing in line for it.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And it put life in such perspective to me, I could not believe it. But if our kids in America get a hint at that and really see that, then I think perspective would change all over the world, because children are children all over the world.
That's true.
They're
that
innocent,
is so true.
And they want more in their lives. They want, you know, our American kids kind of go kicking and screaming about their education, but that's one thing I don't see in other countries. They really are starved for education.
Oh, they are.
They want to learn. When I took flashcards over to Egypt, they were, like, so excited to get them, and they wanted to, like, rather than use the whole deck, everybody wanted one card, you know, because they wanted it so bad. So I know, you know, I'm sure you have the same stories there, that your goal is to educate so that the next generation has a better chance, and the next generation. Because in these countries, they really don't have middle classes, lots of
No, they don't. They
and
really don't.
Really
there
money
there
or
are
nothing.
People that have a lot of money, and then there are people that don't have anything. But I don't see the in-between.
Right.
And that's where these villages come in, you know, where they sort of all clump together.
So you do talks, you do fundraisers in that way.
Uh-huh.
So you talk to Rotaries or anybody actually that will ask you.
Yeah, church groups are really great.
Wonderful.
I really, because, I don't know, they have empathy.
They have compassion. Absolutely.
They do. They do. And then I also love to speak to any school groups. Whether I get any money or not, I just want to educate them.
I think it's important to educate, absolutely.
I think so, too.
I really do see young people getting involved. I really, that there was a, I can't think of his name, Maddie, who was on Oprah and who was really on a ventilator and in a wheelchair, and yet he wrote incredible poetry, and he raised money. And there's another young man she had on there who heard that getting a well in a village would make a difference, and he sold papers, did all kinds of things, and raised the $200-something to put a well in a foreign country.
These
are the amazing young Indigo kids that are just saying, okay, I'm not going to leave it to somebody else.
Exactly.
I'm going to pick up the gauntlet, and I'm going to run with it.
Well, I think we also need more men like Tom Dooley to go around and inspire. He inspired the Peace Corps, the starting of the Peace Corps, because this was in 1954 that he went over to Vietnam, to help rescue these people from the North. And that was before the Peace Corps was started. The Peace Corps was started by President Kennedy. And, you know, when I used to go and speak at schools, there were two pictures up in the school rooms. It was President Kennedy and Tom Dooley. And to this day, I don't think we have any young people like that to inspire our youth, and they need more than rock stars and basketball players and so on.
We really need leaders of humanity.
Exactly. So I just think he was a saint, you know, and so were the Navy corpsmen that worked with him over there at the very beginning. And then the men who worked with my husband, my former husband, but be that as it may, he did some really good work with the children.
It's amazing how, you know, if you ask, people do volunteer. It really, sometimes it's just asking.
That's right. I mean, these guys over there didn't have to leave the camp and come in to the city, which was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So they did.
What do you want your work to look like in the next few years, Betty? What's your goal?
I probably would like to not have to worry too much about, if I could promise four kitchens in a village, that I don't have to think about, oh, gosh, where am I going to get the money? It would be nice to have a nice grant and to be able to then promise to do something and not worry about. I just deposited in the bank today $1,300, which is all that came in for the whole month I was gone.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
that is really milk for about one.
Yeah.
One orphanage.
Less than one orphanage.
Yeah, because you need $1,800 for one orphanage.
So
for milk only. That just covers the milk bill.
Exactly. But I'm not going to worry about it because I know that somewhere along the line, someone will send in, there's a wonderful lady here in Seattle that sent $1,000, and that was part of the $1,300. But she was just a wonderful person. And
I think, too, everybody can do a little. I mean, you know, I think contributions, no matter if they're $10 or $1,000, all make it grow to be an answer to a prayer.
Well, I always say it takes $10 a month to take care of a child, $120 a year. And someone said to me, oh, dear, there are other organizations that want $25 a month and more. I said, if I say $10 a month, then I'll get the $10. But $25 sometimes is a little bit more than somebody should have.
Well, most of the other organizations, and this is what I found, and this is one reason I did what I did in Egypt, too, and the way I did it, was I didn't want to send money to an organization that it went to paperwork in the office.
Exactly.
And, paid somebody's salary. And that's one reason all the work I did in Egypt was, you know, people donated. I took tons of clothing. I took first aid. I took things like that.
Vitamins. Oh, dear.
The dentists were wonderful. They donated toothbrushes and toothpaste.
Exactly.
I have to tell you, they were absolutely lovely. And so I taught all the kids in the orphanage to brush their teeth. We had quite an adventure with that.
Yes, I know.
But, you know, it's true. You do it directly. And that's one reason I'm very, very proud and pleased to be able to, you know, have you on my radio show and have the world know about you, because not one dime is ever wasted with you.
No, definitely not, really. But I do feel that what you've done in Egypt is unbelievable. I had no idea, really, to tell you the truth, Atera. I knew a little bit, but not all that. You've been going over there for 20 years, is that right?
Yeah, I have. But again, it started as a side effect of, actually, I saw widows making, I was a belly dancer, and I saw widows making these scarves for belly dancers, and I told the man, I said, we got to talking, he said, well, these widows don't have means of support. If they've lost, you know, they're out of the relationship, they're not taking back in the family, they can only do things like this. And I told him, I said, well, I'll do this, I'll order these. And I only had like $1,000. Or so,
yeah.
And I said, well, you know, let's do it, and I'll ship them home, but only if you hire the widows. And it started my small business that has gone on for 25 years, and it got away from me. It got away from me, and pretty soon we needed to move the widows, we moved them to a village, and I got into helping a village. And along the way, then, Sister Emmanuel happened in another orphanage, and just before you know it, it's just part of what it is.
I know, and when people hear about you, you'll find that there's another orphanage someplace.
Oh, I know, they did. It's true. Like, the first year I helped the small orphanage, and I had all my friends collect baby clothes, and I was going actually with a tour with, like, 35 other people, and I called them all up, and I said, can you take one empty suitcase and take baby clothes
mm-hmm.
for this orphanage?
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody did, and I shipped them to different people because they weren't all in Washington. And it just got carried away.
I know.
And it was wonderful, but it was a crazy thing.
It was
fabulous. But like you said, next year, then there's five of them.
Yeah.
So, Betty, let's say your website one more time. We're getting towards wrap-up time. It's so hard to let go of you. Your story, to me, is so powerful. How miraculous it is to read one book and send $5.
And that was it.
And thought, well, I've done my good deed. There you go. He's over there. I'm not going to have a chance to probably ever meet this person, but I'm going to do my $5 worth.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, Spirit had a whole different synchronicity to happen for you.
Well, he wrote two more books, too.
Oh,
so.
Good. Tell me, do you know the name? Someone tell us.
Yes. The second one was The Edge of Tomorrow. And the third one was The Night They Burned the Mountain.
So hopefully these are available through Amazon or...
Either that or, I don't know, there's another organization, I think, called Not Published Book, or they're published, but Out of Print Books or something.
Well, he sounds like...
Because he died in 1961.
A man with a mission. And, you know, as spiritual people, it's hard to go, why did they take him? You know, we will, like, here's a saint, here's somebody who's really changing the world. But, you know, sometimes we don't know God's plan.
Well, I kind of feel, the way I feel is that although he came into my life, through me and through a lot of other people, we've been able to open up so much because of him. And I think that he was just... He was somebody special that we would never have known if he hadn't done all this, you know.
And you actually have one orphanage named after him. Is that not true?
No, aren't any more.
Oh,
the Unlock Orphanage was called Happy Place.
Mm-hmm.
And in there was a big sign that said Thomas A. Dooley.
MD. Well.
But there's nothing named for him. There's a grotto at Notre Dame. And he's one of the alumni of Notre Dame, which he loved. Mm-hmm. He's a very spiritual person.
Awesome. One more time, your website, Betty.
www.bettytisdale.com. I also have an email address.
Okay.
bettytisdale@aol.com.
And if you write her, she actually personally writes you back.
Well, I will.
So wonderful. Yes. And so today I would like to encourage everyone, find out what that one moment, that one thing, if you've read a book that inspired you and you want to write the person, write them. Have the courage to write them. Write through the editor in the back of the book. You never know when someone is going to be touched by you and you by them and change the world. We change the world one person at a time through love. And that's the important thing. That's the thing that Betty is a shining example of, that we, in one moment, can achieve things that are amazing. That, you know, there are days when I think, you know, I'm not doing my part. I can't find the right thing. I can't do something. And I'm just in my own little mundane world. But the truth is that we do affect the world, and we have to make it a conscious choice and pick up the gauntlet and help in every way we can. And sometimes it's giving a donation, and sometimes it's giving a kind word or just checking on someone. There are heroes in every backyard in America, around the world, in fact. And if you're listening today to this radio show, know that you are one of those miracles and blessings to someone. If it's just helping your 98-year-old neighbor take the garbage to the curb and back again, it's a blessing. And Mary Ellen, Angel Scribe, and I every day believe in having at least two miracles before noon. And most days, we're blessed with them. We are so trusting that Spirit, the angels, guides, and masters are with us, and that we are part of their work, and we just sometimes have to shake ourselves and get going and show up and be the answer to somebody's prayer. Know that everybody has a gift to give someone, whether it's time, it's money, it's a kind word. Sometimes it's just holding someone's hand, certainly by going to nursing homes and writing letters. We forget that, you know, everybody needs someone, and we are the blessing in some way to every soul.
We got 30 seconds.
And so I want to tell you thank you for joining me today. And remember, until we meet again, to keep your heart light shining bright, to light your way and the way for others. Lots and lots of angel blessings till we talk again.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.